Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, are you effing kidding me? With JoJo from Juries.
Republicans think it's unfair that we talk about the pandemic when they ask us all the time if we are better off now than we were 4 years ago. So, okay, I'll bite. Let's try this without the pandemic, which you can't in reality, of course, but they don't deal in reality. So let's accommodate their delusions anyway. Hey, this should be fun, right? Dear Mon Pa MAGA, Donald Trump called himself the jobs president. He wasn't. He was, however, the only president in the last 80 years to net job losses during his term. In fact, statistically speaking, he was the worst jobs president since Herbert Hoover. Joe Biden has created almost 15 million jobs, and his first 2 years in office, 21 and 22, were the two strongest years of job growth in American history. Donald Trump promised the economy would grow to 4 and 5 and maybe even 6%. It didn't. In fact, it never got above 3.5%. Under Biden, the economy grew 4.9% in the third quarter of last year alone. Donald Trump promised to lower prescription drug prices. He didn't, but Biden did. In fact, he finally beat Big Pharma and allowed Medicare to directly negotiate lower drug prices. And as a result, 4 million seniors on Medicare have now seen their insulin costs capped at $35 a month. And remember that great big beautiful wall Mexico is going to pay for? Well, the little that did get built was paid for by taking money from our own Defense Department, not Mexico. And President Biden actually got Mexico to pay for $1.5 billion for U.S. border security. And none of their former presidents have ever given him the finger, certainly not multiple times. And just as an aside, when Donald Trump claimed to be the law and order president, 91 charges and a mugshot later, it turns out that he meant he would be the recipient of the most law and order. President Biden may have gotten a parking ticket once. Maybe. Not sure. The infrastructure deal Trump promised in 2 weeks, Biden delivered. The manufacturing jobs he was going to bring back and nearly destroyed forever, Biden returned. The corporations who never trickled down their tax breaks, Biden wants paying their fair share. And the world leaders who laughed at Donald Trump are standing in solidarity with Biden instead. Crime is down, the GDP is up, consumer sentiment is up, jobs are up like crazy, the Dow is breaking records, and inflation is cooling. Trump didn't put America first. He didn't make it great again. He put himself first in a country he was then and is now trying to destroy. He's not a self-made business genius. He's a nepotistic fraud who can't pay his bond money. He's not a family man. He's a philanderer who opines about his daughter's sex life. He's not devout. He's devious. And he's not a patriot. He's a traitor. One who is currently charged with trying to overturn an election he lost by any means necessary, including violence. And while I know that when he confuses the name of the town he's in, you'll call him smart. And when he threatens to execute our top general, you'll call him strong. And when he says bloodbath, you'll say he was talking about the auto industry. And when he gets arrested, you'll buy the t-shirt. And that nothing I can ever tell you or show you or prove to you will change your mind about him. But it still needs to be said. So I said it. And I'll also say this. Even if we don't talk about the global thing we can't really not talk about, the only person who was better off 4 years ago was Donald Trump. Bob Seska is my guest today. I love Bob. He is funny as hell, but he is also one of the smartest people I know. You have to check out his podcast and Patreon, The Bob Seska Show, and you have to listen to this chat because we go from zero to dildo in under a minute. Enjoy. Welcome to the Are You Effing Kidding Me podcast and first time face-to-face or screen-to-screen, Bob Seska. Oh my God, hi Bob.
Joe, it's so great to be here. This is going to be so much fun. I can't wait to get started.
I'm sure it's going to be a good time. I have no doubt about that because off recording, we're just going to jump right in. We were talking about Trump's dildos.
That's because that's what we do, right?
Who else does that? Who else has that kind of content out there?
Yeah, you won't find a lot of Trump dildo discourse on Twitter or any other social. No other podcasts have the full scope of Trump dildo discourse. It's so important.
Dildo discourse was such an underrated cover album. Hootie and the Blowfish cover band.
That's right. Oh my God, I forgot that album. Yes, Hootie and the Blowfish's Dildo Discourse. So much better than their first album, if you haven't heard it.
So their first album was Don Jr. Shelfs. So that's what started us down this rabbit hole of Trump's dildos, because we were talking about seeing inside people's homes, and I have this weird fetish. I guess that's a weird segue, but where I like to screenshot their videos, and then I'll zoom in, like I'll zoom in on your background and like zoom in on all the cool stuff on your shelves. Yeah. And I've done that with Don Jr., which is really not healthy. But you and I agreed that there used to be some weird stuff on there. And one of those items looked like a very weird dildo.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought, well, this is like a prototype for Donald Trump's next product. Because it astonishes me, and this is one of the things I can't get past about Trump. I mean, we're, 9 years into this nightmare now? And I still can't get past the fact that Donald Trump at one point said, hey, you know, it'd be a great idea if we sold meat in the mall, in the same store where they sell the vibrators, in sharper image. So, you know, when people are there shopping for vibrators, they go, oh my God, I forgot to buy meat for today, but thank God there are Trump steaks here that I can bring home for my family and poison them all. So yeah, one step ahead of trends, right?
Isn't all of that out of business now? Like, I think, is Sharper Image still in existence? I'm not even
sure. And I think the Trump steaks put them out of business. I think that was the last straw. They said, we failed to sell meat. That was the last thing we tried. And now they're done. Yeah.
They even went for like a hybrid product, which was like meat while using the dildo. That was an epic failure as well.
Or the dildo's made of meat, right? Which, of course, so you not only have fun, but then later you have dinner. All one stop, one item. See, I'm telling you, he's a genius. He's a very stable genius. Always the very greatest ideas.
You can't.
And people are like, you know what? This guy, we got to have this guy as the steward of our economy again, because he makes such great choices.
You can't beat his meat. Sorry. I'm so sorry. But it's true. It's true. No, that's not true. But it's true. Actually, recently, it was the Ohio rally I'm going to ask you about. You know how they have on the rallies, it's so weird. There's like an ad on the side where they run
it. Yeah. RSBN, right.
Right. And one of the ads was for his meat, or for some kind of meat. And it said it had a 25 or a 35 year shelf life. And I was like, what kind of meat is that?
What kind of meat is that?
Is it going on Don Jr.'s shelf?
Like, yes, that's right. That's what Don Jr. was testing out. That's what meat looks like after 30. What did you say? 30 years?
25 or 35 years. I'm going to find it. I have it in my DMs. I'm going to find it.
Oh, you
somebody
know what that
sent
is?
It to me.
I think I know what that's all about. I think that's a survivalist thing. I think that's right up there with, you know, the gold and the survivor shelters that Glenn Beck used to sell. I think that's all part of like the end of times. And so, yes, we all need, when we're in our underground bunkers, we're going to need to have meat that lasts 30 years.
That's right. It makes perfect sense, because that's when the government's going to come into their houses and take their AR-15s, or try to, or something, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
the government.
They're going to take their AR-15s and their very old meats.
Excuse me. We're not here for the rifle, sir. We want the meat.
Yes, we're here for that toxic meat that's just crawling with bugs and maggots.
We need to carbon date your meat because we're not sure if it's the oldest specimen on the planet or not.
That's right. They're going to treat it like a Superfund site, like they'd have to do with the toxic waste cleanup. A bunch of guys in hazmat suits coming by. Oh, you bought the meat, didn't you? Yeah, that was a mistake. You saw the ad on RSBN and you bought that meat, right?
You wouldn't wear a mask, but you rolled the dice on some Trump meat. Yeah, okay. No vaccine for you. Trump meat.
I'd like to see like a challenge. Someone in the press corps, like Maggie Haberman, next time she's with Donald Trump, has to pull out some of that 30-year-old meat that they were hawking on RSBN and say, hey, Mr. Trump, would you like to try this meat? It's delicious. Would you like to put this on your hamburger?
If anybody asks him to pull out his meat, you know what he's going to do. Although I'm not sure that he can see it or access it at this point, but it's possible.
He can't access it. That's my favorite part of that statement. He's no longer able to reach. It just doesn't happen.
There's a lot of fupa to get past first. I don't know that the little fun-sized fingers can make it that far.
Fun-sized fingers.
I feel bad for fun-sized things when I say that because it's like they didn't deserve.
No, the apologies to fun-sized things.
Yeah, but I can't call them king size. That's definitely not accurate.
That's right. Now the fun-sized people are coming after you on Twitter. How dare you impugn fun size?
And even if they're not fun size, they're offended. They're going to pretend to be offended anyway, because I forgot I was supposed to put a thing under my microphone, according to Anthony Davis, who knows these things, because otherwise it makes a lot of noise. But yeah, they're like, I don't even know any fun size people, but I'm offended for them. Okay. That's what they're going to say.
I thought you were talking about the candy bars, not actual people who are fun size. So you're one step ahead of me on the fun size front. I'm still like old school. Like, I wish you talking about candy bars. The ones that everyone hates. They're like, right? Okay, for God's sake. Oh, it was really funny. We were laughing about this when the president was doing his State of the Union the other night, and he was talking about you get 10% fewer Snickers. And I was like, oh my God, that's a sentence that's been spoken during a State of the Union. 10% fewer Snickers.
He's the man of the people.
Yes.
He's putting us where we are. Look, he gets a lot of shit for that stuff. But that shrinkflation, which is not about going swimming in a pool, that's real. And this is what me and my friends talk about. It's like, what the fuck's up with my bag of chips?
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's right. That's right. And those rat bastards. See, there's actually, that's a serious, serious thing. And I think there's some politics going on with all of these corporations that are price gouging. I think what they believe is that they can do whatever the hell they want with prices and cheaping out on the amount of food that's actually in a package, like chips or, you know, 10% fewer Snickers. And they know they can get away with this because people will blame Joe Biden and the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this easy out, like, well, these nincompoops will just do nothing but blame the Democrats. So we can do whatever the hell we want with prices. It's really kind of sinister. I mean, I don't have any specific information along those lines, just to be clear about that.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of hypothesizing, but it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? That's the kind of rationale that I think CEOs and CFOs and, you know, corporate people would actually make.
100%, because that's one of these big, like, bang your head against the wall kind of problems that's going on right now. There was some survey, I forget what state, some middle state, that they asked people, you know, what is your personal financial situation right now? Is it good or bad? And like 80% were like, it's really good. And the same people were asked, what is your thought on the strength of the economy at the moment? So the same people were like, you know, my financial situation is great. All of them said the economy is terrible. Mm-hmm. And there's that disconnect, right? I think that's a messaging issue. But I also think that, like you said, corporations aren't helping us because they're like, oh, well, you're going to pay this much for my stuff and you're just going to blame somebody else because you don't know my name. I'm just going to get richer. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, I've been kind of covering this casually as being, I have a name for it. I call it the American nervous breakdown. Just this thing where I think people are going indiscriminately bananas. And I think part of the reason is, and I'm talking about making horrible choices in terms of politics and public policy and things like that. But I think part of the problem is they're hearing one thing in their ears. And then they're looking at their bank accounts, or they're looking at their wages, or they're looking at their personal finances. And there's a gigantic disconnect between what they're being told and what actually is. And of course, this is writ large with Donald Trump. I always wonder whether when he says ridiculous things like windmills cause cancer, whether they're all going, wait a second. I don't think that can't possibly be real. I think there are a few people in those rally crowds who are like, I don't understand that. That can't possibly be true.
Right.
And so there is this chasm between what is being said and what actually is. And I think the challenge for the Biden campaign right now is to just connect those two things where they should be connected. And the fortunate thing, and this is, I'm getting way, way off topic, Joe, but that's where I think the cash haul by the Biden campaign, the significant advantage that Biden has over Donald Trump in terms of fundraising, I think that's where we're going to see the rubber hit the road in terms of connecting the economy with and making it personal and saying, well, this is all good for you. This is how economic growth and booming economy and growing wages and lowering inflation, this is how you're going to benefit from this. And this is why you're seeing so many good things in your, you know, in your checking account and with your 401k and with your retirement, your IRA and so forth. This is where the Biden campaign is going to be really, really super effective. And I have complete confidence in that over the next 6-7 months.
I think you're right. And I think we have enough time to push that sort of messaging to make those two come together more closely and overlap so that reality reflects reality. And I think he's really good at that messaging. I think he's got to tap into it. But obviously, you know, we have to do something about the disconnect. But the Republican noise machine, right? Like that's what we're also up against, where they micro target, you know, moms, and they fear monger and they spin and they counter narrative all the time. You know, and there is this tendency again to like normalize Trump, which we'll jump right into this too, because at Saturday at an Ohio rally, right? So a rally that started, by the way, with Donald Trump doing the flaccid salute to an anthem sung by January 6th defendants or inmates, not really sure who they are. I've never done a lot of research on who they are, but I believe that they've all been charged with something related to January 6th. Yeah. And he calls them hostages. And they do this like intro where it almost sounded like a parody. But that's how the rally begins. And then he gets into the whole immigrants are animals portion, which seems to have been overshadowed by the following, which is, he said, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath. And he continues on, right? He says a bloodbath. I believe he said it twice. I'm not positive, but
for our country.
For our country, right.
Yes.
Right. He did say, thank you. Yeah. You're right. That's a key component, because he did say a bloodbath for our country. And what is MAGA and all Republicans, what are they all doing? And the media too, to another extent.
Oh, yeah.
They're saying Hold on, no. You're missing the context. Play the whole clip. Because before he says the bloodbath thing, which is something none of us are surprised he would say, he's talking about the auto industry. And after he says the bloodbath clip, he goes sort of back to talking about the auto industry. So now they're saying it was a nuanced comment that we missed the context surrounding.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, because Donald Trump is all about nuance, right? Everything he says, well, you know, there's all kinds of gray area and wiggle room with that. No, it's absolutely absurd. You got to take him at face value. There's nothing that Donald Trump has ever done in his entire life, you know, on the political stage or otherwise, that has earned him the benefit of the doubt. He does not deserve the benefit of the doubt whatsoever. So if Donald Trump says, if I lose, it's going to be a bloodbath for the country, why would anyone say, well, you know what? He was really talking about the auto industry, because somehow the country also means the auto industry. I don't know. Where is that correlation? But I mean, if you talk about context, you have to look at the broader context of Donald Trump. And this is how he's able to get away with all this crap, because people are looking at everything he says through too narrow a scope and not seeing it in the macro sense where, yeah, I mean, I can't even believe we have to recap all of this stuff, all of the Donald Trump things, you know, the insurrection being the centerpiece of all of that, to remind people, well, yeah, this is what he does. This is who he is. And this is the sort of thing he says, constantly threatening some sort of violence, constantly. And in a way that gives him some kind of wiggle room, like, oh, well, he was just kind of hypothetically saying that maybe there could be, someone might do it. Someone might engage in something, but you know what? He's straight up threatening it. It doesn't take you don't have to be a linguistics expert or an expert on rhetoric to understand exactly what he's saying and who his audience is. So the broader context is, this is in his nature. His nature is to say whatever he needs to say to secure as much power and wealth for himself as he can. And you add to the extra dimension of all of this, the fact that he's running for president almost entirely so he can escape legal jeopardy. I mean, that's a big component in all of this too. So to talk about Donald, making sure we don't take Donald Trump out of context, I think we all know exactly what the context is. And I'm astonished. You know, certainly I expect this kind of context gibberish from the MAGA people, from the red hats,
right?
But I don't expect it from the press. Like, I saw like Kevin Drum and Ian Bremmer and some of these other guys going, well, you know what, he was talking about the auto industry. Don't patronize me. Don't talk to me as though I haven't watched hundreds of hours of these rallies and mm-hmm. hundreds of hours of his COVID press conferences 4 years ago. And like, I don't know what this guy means and what he says. Michael Cohen testified under oath to the House of Representatives that Donald Trump speaks in coded language.
Yeah.
It's just something he does. It's his mafia style. Mm-hmm. And saying there will be a bloodbath for the country. I mean, Ian Bremmer and Kevin Drum and some of the other people in the mainstream press, they may see that just in the context of cars or whatever the hell the other things were, because Donald Trump jumps around a lot. He says one thing and then he's off on some other topic. He's talking about Joe Biden being a disgrace. And then suddenly he's talking about how we turn on the water faucet and the water doesn't come out. He's just all over.
Yeah.
But the context for all of this is crucial, and that is Donald Trump will engage in more violence or incite more violence if he loses this election. And all you got to do is go back to 2021, you know, January 6th, 2021, and know exactly what that's all about.
I mean, it's sometimes, like you said before, about this disconnect between what they're experiencing and what they're hearing. It's like watching some of this stuff, it feels like you're taking crazy pills still, right? Like, no, you did not hear what you heard with your own ears. You did not see what you saw with your own eyes. Trust me. Here's what it actually meant. And that he's still getting accommodated in any way. I was just talking to, I forget who, but like the press all Sunday was framing the question as, do you think he was speaking about the auto industry? Do you think there was a context there about the auto industry? That's not how you frame that question. It's, why is Donald Trump still inciting political violence? And are you okay with that?
Yeah,
not
yeah.
giving them an opportunity to give him an out. But this is a guy as nuanced, I wrote about, as nuanced as Roger Stone's thong bikini. Okay. Like, He's as nuanced as Amber Heard's shit on Johnny Depp's bed. Like, Seriously, he makes white bread look intricate. Like, he's not nuanced. He says bloodbath because he means bloodbath. And what does Ma and Pa MAGA hear when he says bloodbath? They're not hearing China and the auto industry. They're hearing bloodbath. And in the same speech, he's talking about pardoning violent criminals who tried to kill our lawmakers and erected a DIY gallows with Mike Pence's name on it. We can get to Mike Pence. So it's stand back and stand by. It's all of those things all still, right?
Yeah.
But there's also this thing that's, I cannot believe we're in 2024, Bob, and we're still, take Trump seriously, but not literally. Really? Are we still there? Is the press still there? I'm not there. I was never there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the thing that drives me crazy more than anything else right now is there seems to be, and I really need to check some numbers on this, but there seems to be this ongoing amnesia. I think a lot of us have witnessed this over the years, that I think a lot of voters forgot what it was like 4 years ago. And I'm talking about not just during COVID, the previous 3 years were just as much a nightmare. I think people forget Charlottesville. People forget fire and fury. We're just out of the gate. Donald Trump decided to start poking Kim Jong-un. Like, okay, you know what? It was almost like he was trying to incite some form of nuclear exchange with North Korea. And these were some of the things. I mean, there was a manufacturing recession in 2019. I always like to remind people where, you know, the money being spent on manufacturing was a teeny tiny fraction of what is being spent right now under Joe Biden, thanks to things like the infrastructure, bipartisan infrastructure bill, and the Inflation Reduction Act and things like that. But people forget the awfulness. And it's astonishing to me that that actually happened. I mean, if we're talking about, oh God, I don't know, the couple of years maybe during Bill Clinton, I don't know, I can imagine during the 90s, you might forget something in politics from the 90s.
Right.
But 4 years ago, when we were wiping our asses with coffee filters, where what was it? The unemployment rate spiked to 14%, 9 million jobs lost. How can people possibly forget that? And then the next thing I notice is a lot of people yada yadaing the pandemic as though, well, that doesn't count against Donald Trump. As though that's not his responsibility. Oh, he's only the president of the United States who has purview over all kinds of resources and experts to solve a pandemic, decided as people were dying and the infections were spreading across the world, he's going, well, I'm not going to do anything because I don't want to cause a panic. I know how deadly it is. It's deadlier than your most strenuous flu. And by the way, who uses the word strenuous to describe flu other than Donald Trump, that colossal weirdo? But he knew all about this and decided to do nothing. And then he did the least he could possibly do without doing nothing once he started doing something. And then by, what was it, April, just several weeks in, he finally said, hey, you know what? Liberate Michigan, liberate Ohio, liberate Virginia. Everyone just go and do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
And that resulted in a colossal death toll. I don't know how people forget this, but they have.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The collective amnesia component is something I think about a lot. And I have a video coming out. I was going to respond to your tweet because you tweeted the Trump's truth about, are you better off now than you're 4 years ago? That's a right? So that's a whole, it's a whole like Orwellian sort of revisionist history. It's like gaslighting you into thinking, wait, was I? And I was like, how do I not remember? Mm-hmm. And it's terrifying how effective it is. But the answer to that is we have these conversations and we go on social media and we push back because hopefully you are very much a trusted resource. I very much try to be a trusted resource and we just come at them with the facts. But it's interesting to me that they love to forgive Trump's last year. Let's just obviously those manufacturing numbers, to your point, they were going down before the pandemic. There was the economy, the debt was astronomically increasing before the pandemic. People forget, thanks to his tax cut, the economy was not thriving before the pandemic, but people don't want to talk about it. He inherited a strong economy from Obama and then he destroyed it and walked away the worst jobs president since Hoover. But they give him a pass on all of that. And yet not a one of them will ever say the inflation Joe Biden came into office having to contend with, which was, by the way, global, is the pandemic's fault. They won't say that. They'll all attribute that inflation, which we're still bringing down, to Joe Biden's incompetence. So it's like a complete double standard. But that's again, that's how they message successfully. And it is terrifying. But I want to talk about this. There's two things that he does this on that are effective. Well, three, because the election is one. He says that he won 2020, that it was stolen. I mean, it's insane. But the majority of his party believes that. And if you saw those exit poll numbers in North Carolina, like that was terrifying. How many people did not believe that Joe Biden was legitimately elected? Yeah. There's the January 6th piece where they're now hostages and political prisoners. And that was peaceful protest. And I mean, I don't know how they're all of those things. And Antifa and Nancy Pelosi, a.k.a. Nikki Haley, is responsible. I don't understand that. But the one of all of them, I guess January 6th and this one are right there at the top. Is COVID. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? When you and I and everybody listening and watching this knows exactly where you were 4 years ago, right? Like 4 years ago, we're looking at, we're just in lockdown now, you know, it was the Hunger Games to get toilet paper. I remember like crying if I could get an Instacart order delivered. But people were dying, right?
Yeah.
And it would only clearly get worse. But something else that I wanted to ask you about on this topic, you were talking about April and how all of a sudden it seemed like he was just like, oh, no, I'm good. I want to attack masks. I want to attack social distancing. I want to, you know, liberate Michigan stuff so that they'll fight. And there is this theory out there. Don't tell me if you think this is crazy, but that Jared conversation he had with Jared Kushner about letting people who wouldn't vote for him or not wouldn't be inclined to vote for him die from COVID. And that was like a light bulb moment where it was not just blue states, but, you know, marginalized communities, lower income cities. Let's talk about the revisionist history component, but also do you think there's any merit to that being possible?
Absolutely. See also what I said about giving Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt. I mean, again, what has he done for me to start to believe that, oh, well, that's just rumor. That's just speculation. No, of course. I mean, it's entirely fitting within his personality and certainly how he approached the pandemic, which was entirely through the prism of re-election. Donald Trump made choices in that pandemic from the word go. I'm talking maybe as far back as 2019 when COVID first began to emerge. I think at that point he started to think in terms of, oh hell, I don't want to be like John McCain in 2008. John McCain got caught up in the Great Recession and the collapse of the financial markets in 2008 and wasn't able to respond to it and ended up losing that election to Barack Obama. This is in Donald Trump's mind. Obviously, I think Obama would have won that election irrespective of the financial crisis. But Donald Trump thinks, okay, well, the financial crisis screwed John McCain. I'm not going to be like John McCain. So I'm going to roll the dice on this. I'm going to make moves that I think will benefit me in November. And so consequently, he didn't act. He didn't want to create a panic. What he didn't want is he didn't want the economy to collapse because he knew he would take the blame for that, or it was possible that he would take the blame for it. And so he made moves to try to ignore it, hoping that it would disappear on its own. And even after he began to acknowledge that COVID was dangerous and a problem, he still took that approach. Like, it's going to go away by Easter. Think about how close we are to Easter right now. He said it was going to be gone. It was just going to disappear magically. That was his solution to the whole thing. And so that was his entire approach, was to sacrifice lives, to sacrifice public safety, because he didn't want to cause too much of a stir that might damage his reelection chances. And the horrible irony about that, Donald Trump gambled on all those lives, our lives, and he didn't even win. It was a failed gamble on his part. 400,000 people died during his final year in office. As of January 20th, 2021, Donald Trump's last half day in office, the 400,000th American died from COVID. And that was Donald Trump's sacrifice in order to get to a place where he didn't even win. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, he's such a sociopath that that will never bother him. He's not going to ever say, oh shit, I let all those people die because I was worried about re-election and I didn't win anyway. What right. kind of sacrifice was that? And he'll never acknowledge those, that death toll. There, I mean, at one point, there were more deaths per day in the United States than there was on 9/11 for a whole series of days. If you were to look at the top 10 deadliest days in American history, Antietam is in there, 9/11 is in there, a bunch of COVID days from 2020 are in the top 10 list of deadliest days in American history. Mm-hmm. And again, that's, that includes two wars that we fought on our soil, the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. And people forget this.
And yet just the other day, maybe yesterday or the day before, or maybe the clips are out there now, he said that his performance was a miracle, right? A miracle. Yeah. Well, even in the middle of it, he gave himself... insult. I don't know if you remember, he gave himself a 10. He was asked by a reporter, what do you give yourself? And it was, I think we were like 1,000 deaths a day. And he's like, oh, I give myself a 10. Of course, there was the infamous, I have no responsibility, I take no responsibility like for any of it. And and he is, to your point, also such a sociopath that as this country hit 100,000 deaths in May, he went, I think it was right around exactly the same time, he started golfing again. Remember, we were all like, well, he's not golfing. Like, at least there's that. Like, he's not that much of a sociopath. And then he was. And and there's all these studies now where they attribute like 500,000 excess deaths to just his evil, not even like accidental, like purely evil incompetence. Yeah. And like you said, they were briefing him on this shit way, way back because they were like, okay, there's this thing going on in China. Like, I don't know what's going on. And then by January, they're like, yeah, this thing in China is like, I don't know. And then by the time we're having the cruise here and it's he's dithering, downplaying, denying, not doing anything, not implementing anything. He'd fired the two people that or the groups that Obama had put in place to handle pandemics 2 years earlier. And he's lying to all of us every day and telling Bob Woodward he knows just how deadly it is. It's a real killer, right? And then he says to Jonathan Swan, it is what it is.
Numerous studies showed that Donald Trump and his incompetent response to the pandemic contributed directly to hundreds of thousands of American deaths. I mean, there were 400,000 in that final year, which wasn't even a full year. I mean, we're talking about between, you know, March of 2020 through January 2021. But I think it's either 150,000 or 200,000 deaths are directly attributed to Donald Trump's poor, ridiculous, awful, insulting response to the pandemic. Irreparable damage that he created. And much of the time through his own example. I know sometimes when I bring this up, Joe, I get the response from MAGA trolls or just contrarians in general who say, well, Joe Biden's had, there have been many more COVID deaths under Joe Biden.
Well,
first of all, Joe Biden's been around in the White House with COVID, not him having COVID, but with COVID as a thing for much longer than Donald Trump. Donald Trump was only there, but what dealt with COVID from March until the following January, and that was it for him. But also I compare it to this. So there's a burning building and there are people in the building and they're about to be killed by the burning building. Fire Company One, led by Donald Trump, rolls up and looks up at the building and said, well, this is bad, but screw it. I'm not going to bother with this, putting out this fire. I'm not going to do anything about this. Just drive away. Then the building keeps burning and burning and burning, and people are dying and dying and dying. Fire truck two comes up, led by Joe Biden. He's got to put out the goddamn fire. And already, you know, the damage has been done. You know, there's not a whole lot you can do. And that's exactly the dynamic between those two presidencies. So these are all things that, with our social media accounts, all of us, we need to be constantly, it's an incredible thing to say, this goes back to the amnesia thing, that we constantly have to remind people that this is the way it was, and this was the damage from it, and we can't do this again. Because there will be another crisis if Donald Trump is elected in November. There will be another thing, maybe a pandemic, maybe another pandemic. How's that going to go? He said he's going to eliminate funding for any school district that wants to have vaccine mandates. And he always says, speaking of context, he never says COVID vaccine mandates. He always just says vaccine mandates straight up. Every single state in the United States, one thing that every state, red state, blue state, in between, purple state, can agree on is polio vaccine mandates in schools. That's a great thing, because every state has polio vaccine mandates, every single state, in order to attend school. Donald Trump wants to defund all those states, I guess, and bring back polio and bring back measles and maybe even have a resurge in COVID and long COVID. And there, we're back to that again, not even to mention any foreign policy crisis, any sort of I mean, we know for a fact that if Donald Trump gets into the White House again, Ukraine is going to be annexed entirely by Russia. That'll be it. And Putin will turn his attention to Poland and other Eastern European nations, which Donald Trump will then encourage them, encourage Vladimir Putin to invade. And he said that out loud. Take him seriously. These, I mean, this, the ramification, and then the economy, on the economy. I mean, every single Republican administration going back at least 100 years has presided over a recession. So if you want another recession, elect Donald Trump, because he will preside over another recession. The trends dictate that. History dictates that that will happen. And of course, Donald Trump is a horrible steward of his own finances. I mean, why on earth, going back to Trump dildos and Trump steaks, why on earth would everyone, anyone want to put him in charge of the economy again? It's astonishing.
Well, I mean, we're going to get to that too, because
I just threw a lot at you. I'm sorry.
No, it's fantastic. But in terms of why anybody would want him in charge of the world's largest economy when he can't pay his bond in the New York fraud case, which we're going to get to. But there is this thing, like this steward idea. Ow, fuck, hey, table. This steward of democracy thing, that like this is this distinction for me that's the biggest of all, right? So you describe them as firemen. I describe them as buses. I consider Joe Biden to be that like reliable old bus that's going to, I always think I'm going to the mall, right? So I'm waiting for the bus to go to the mall, and this old bus comes sputtering a little bit, and the seats are kind of worn out, and its paint job is chipping, but it's a reliable bus. It's always going to be
not even called a bus. It's called a jitney. You can just call it a straight up jitney. That'd be an older bus. Yeah.
Point is, it's going to get you to the mall. Might take you a long time. Okay. And you're not getting any fancy bells and whistles, but it's going to get you to the mall. Or your choice is the speed bus from the movie Speed. Sort of flies by. It's got a bomb on board, or it's going to blow up, and Sandra Bullock's not driving it, by the way, but it's going to get you maybe to the mall, but a lot faster, or it's going to completely explode and you're all going to die and it's going to be carnage, but it's more exciting, right? It sizzles better. Like what bus are you choosing? You know what I mean? But so stewards of democracy, like Donald Trump was a president of the United States who attacked actively public health measures, actively undermined mask wearing and social distancing, demeaned anybody who took part in those things while people were dying by the thousands a day. That's like so, to me, criminal, and such an abdication of the responsibilities of good stewardship. Like it is really crucial that we always continue to push the truth and remind people, like, do you remember when he almost killed his Secret Service because he had COVID and didn't like made them do that joyride? And then the whole Evita thing with the mask, and he was couldn't breathe, and he practically almost died and almost killed Christie, like, because he didn't want to tell anybody he had COVID. He had super spreader event at Amy Coney Barrett's, whatever you call it.
Oh, yeah.
Sacrificing of babies. I don't know what you call that, but yeah, he. such an irresponsible non-steward of democracy, of public safety. I mean, that, to me, this binary choice between them, there's so many stark contrasts, but that is such a crucial one, right?
Yeah, yeah, it very much is. And one of the things that we also forget that took place right in the midst of all of that is the fact that in Lafayette Square, when he wanted to do during the BLM protests, where people were just fed up with cops murdering black men in the streets. And by the way, Donald Trump talks about the unfairness, the two-tiered justice system.
Yeah,
George Floyd had 9 minutes. That was his arrest, trial, you know, the arraignment, indictment, et cetera, sentencing, and then death penalty, all there in 9 minutes, thanks to Derek Chauvin. And so people were sick and tired of that, took to the streets, especially in Lafayette Park near the White House. And in order to do his pandering, faker Bible photo op, Donald Trump asked Mark Esper if it's okay to shoot protesters. I mean, this is something that he considered as an option. So but he didn't do that. He just tear gassed them so he could go and hold up a Bible in front of a church. Donald Trump couldn't tell you a single word of what was in that Bible or what goes on in that church. But he was there to pander to all the evangelicals in the midst of that for some reason and decided, hey, you know what? These people who are peaceably assembled, as is guaranteed in the First Amendment, screw it. We're gonna we can't shoot them. Okay, well let's make them miserable instead and get them out of the way so I can march over there.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just gonna say, but that was right. I mean, right in the heart of all of that was that ridiculous display. God, there's so many things, and I think that's one of the things he hides behind is just the flooding the zone idea. Yeah.
Yeah. We're on to the next thing all the time. And that's the thing. Mm-hmm. We can't be on to the next thing because we have to hold them accountable for the last thing. And there's a lot of things to hold. But that's why there's so many of us, because while they may have all the shit to flood the zone with, we have the people. And that's what we have to remember all the time. But like this Lafayette Square thing, you have to also remember that some of that or all of that was motivated because he went into the bunker because he didn't like how loud they were being outside. It made him scared. And so he did that interview where he's like, I just went down there to have a look. And then they called him a big pussy crybaby. And he was like, I'm not a big pussy crybaby. And I'm going to tear gas you to prove it. And I want this pursed Bible for my daughter who I want to fuck. I want that. And I want to shake it in front of this church I don't go to. And it's all boarded up. And I want everyone to know that I love God and God loves me. And that's, it was ridiculous, right? But it's also up because he doesn't do anything, like not sort of transparently back to this whole non-nuanced thing. Mm-hmm. Now, in Project 2025, there is an outline for him using our military to police our streets to put down protests against him. Yes. So like Lafayette Square was just a little taste. It was a little preview.
Oh, yeah. 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 And by the way, I love your whiny Trump voice.
Thank you. I really do a good Trump. It's George Hahn doing wonderful Trump. So it's like it's a bit of a stretch. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and then in terms of Project 2025, I mean, this is the big story that no one's talking about, or we're trying to talk about it. We're trying to tell people,
right,
which is, I think, like you and I, our job is to just like run around and tap people on the shoulder. Hey, don't you remember? Why are you forgetting this? What's wrong with you? Why don't you know this?
Up is up. Down is down.
Yes. Don't forget. Don't forget. but Project 2025 is the way Donald Trump, and you can certainly throw into the mix Agenda 47. That's the way Donald Trump becomes a dictator. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's right there in black and white. The Heritage Foundation has composed all of this. It's a roadmap for Donald Trump to become president for life, the American Vladimir Putin. That's exactly what Donald Trump wants. And that's not just politically, but financially. Donald Trump wants to be a Putin-style, you know, Russian oligarch-style kleptocrat. He wants to pillage the American treasury for his own wealth. And that's exactly what he's going to do, because there will be no one to stop him when he does. Because first, the thing he's going to do is he says he's going to drill baby drill and start his deportation thing, which he may do those things. I don't know what he's going to get from drilling. We're producing more oil now than we have, than any country has in the history of human civilization.
Right.
But anyway, so I mean, that aside, that's window dressing for the Red Hats. What he's really going to do is he's going to fire 50,000 federal workers and replace them all with Trump loyalists who are right now being interviewed and set up to take the jobs on day one. And then he's going to move the Department of Justice under direct control of the White House. It will no longer be an independent agency, obviously with some political appointees in there, but independent of the political aspects of the White House. He's going to change that so that the Department of Justice becomes his own personal Gestapo. And by the way, the Department of Justice includes an agency known as the U.S. Marshals. And the U.S. Marshals are the ones who would drag him out of the White House if he decides to stay beyond his four-year term. So, and the worst thing, I think the most unspoken thing about all of this is once Donald Trump gets into the White House, he doesn't have to run again. Whether constitutionally or extra constitutionally, there's a like a teeny tiny sliver chance that he's just going to stay for the 4 years. He doesn't have to run again. Any president going into a second presidential term where they can't run again, they're kind of freed of any political considerations. They don't need to run again, so they can do things in a bolder way. They can achieve more things that they want to do without having to worry about how it damages their reelection chances. Donald Trump's got that. And he's going to obviously operate as though, well, it's not just one term, it's forever. I mean, remember, he said this publicly, and I'm putting this squarely in context, by the way. He has said publicly many times that he deserves a do-over of his first term because of the Russia investigation and all the other investigations, how vicious everyone was, how mean they were to him. So he's thinking in his mind, and he's softening the ground with his supporters, yep. I get a do-over. So he's elected in November and is inaugurated in January. That's the do-over of his first term, meaning he could just stay. And people are like, well, Bob, there's term limits on the presidency. He can't do it. Okay, yeah. Okay, try to remove him. Try to remove him next time around. See right. Who's going to do that? Is it going to be one of his 50,000 loyalists who's going to remove him, grab him by the scruff and drag him out of the White? No. There's no one to enforce any of this crap.
Right.
So, yeah. And then meantime, the other thing, one last thing he's going to do is, you were talking about the military. He is going to have the military arrest peaceful protesters and charge them with the Insurrection Act.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's going to hit them with the heavy duty charges just for protesting, undermining Donald Trump's presidency. So that's just for starters. So this is I think it's great. We've been talking about what's happened already. Mm-hmm. And now what the next step is going to be, how much worse it's going to be next time around. There will be no one to tell him no next time around.
Exactly.
And that's horrendous and dangerous.
And the end of, you know, democracy as we know it, to which the trolls will say, we're a constitutional republic. But I digress, because yes, I mean, like, we don't have to guess what he's planning to do. He's saying these things out loud with context.
There's a website there. You can look it up. Project 2025 has a website. You can read all about it. It's right there. Right. Not trying to hide it.
Right. He doesn't have any nuance to hide it. And he's softened, as you said, softened the ground. He's pulling the base along. He's normalizing these ideas enough over and over and over again. He does this all the time where he finds one, like, you know, incendiary thing, and he test balloons it. And then he kind of folds it in all the time, like the dictator talk, which is like, what? He's a dictator? And it's like, oh my God, he's a dictator. And I was like, I said dictator again. Oh my God. Oops. I dictatored again. Oops. I keep dictatoring. And then they're like, maybe we do need a dictator. I think we need a dictator. And they're like, that's going to be great. Dictators are great. We need somebody to come in, strong man. And it's like, really? You think that's going to work in your favor? You think you're going to be the one who's not keeping him your cash and your wife and your farm? And no, you're not going to be sitting with the, you know, at the fancy tables with the bougie dinners. You're going to be the one in the work camp giving him all your money. But like, that's what he does, is he brings people along, but the base along with this crazy, so that it's all normalized, and it's propaganda, and it's terrifying, and it's stuff that they're all like, that sounds great, but it's really not beneficial to any of them. And that's why it requires so much pushback. But he gives us a little bit of a gift in that way, because he doesn't have any capacity for speaking metaphorically. And yet there's still, like, going back all the way full circle, and yet there's still, the media is still trafficking in this. But did he mean it that way? And it's like, I want to bang my head against a wall. It's maddening.
Yeah. Let's talk about context. God damn it. There's so much context. What the hell are you talking about? Right. Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, there's, again, going back to disconnects, there is this disconnect between, well, yeah, I think maybe we should try a dictatorship, because I saw one interview, I think it was Good Liars, or maybe it was Jordan Klepper, or someone was saying, talking to one of these Trump supporters, and they're like, yeah, I think, you know, America needs to be, you know, grabbed by the lapels and smacked around a little bit or whatever. And maybe we do need a dictatorship. But by the way, I love democracy and the Constitution.
Yeah. And don't come for my gun, because it's protected.
Yeah, one of these things is not like the other. These are not, you know, there's no Venn diagram overlap between dictatorship and democracy. These are two separate circles. Mm-hmm. But Donald Trump knows what his audience is all about. They know that, you know, he loves the poorly educated. He said it out loud. I love the poorly educated, because they're gullible enough to believe his bullshit. And so that, like, his bread and butter is right there. Stupid, gullible people who just, they have broken bullshit detectors. They don't understand the difference between truth and fiction and facts and lies, you know.
But he lets them be hateful and bigoted, and he reminds them that they were born special, and that those people are coming to take that specialness away from them, even though they don't know them and have never seen a transgender person in their lives, or a drag queen for that matter. But back to them buying all his bullshit, there is obviously this undercurrent bullshit. I think of it as sort of the base the entire House of Cards is built upon, that he is this self-made billionaire, that he is this business savant, when we know now, today, that he can't pay his New York fraud case bond. The $464 million, is it? The $464 million bond.
Plus interest, yeah.
I can't pay it. It's too much. We went to all the insurance companies, and they were like, I don't even know you. And so can you maybe, like, not make me pay? Like, I thought he was a billionaire and he had tons of money.
I can't even believe Chubb did it. I guess, I mean, Donald Trump did put up a lot of collateral for the Chubb bond.
Yeah.
On the New York State thing.
Yeah, and E. Jean Carroll.
On the E. Jean Carroll. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. I'm getting all my legal liabilities mixed up with Donald Trump. I can't keep track.
There's so much.
He says he's worth $9 billion, Joe. Uh-huh. I mean, that's the number he said out loud. I'm worth $9 billion.
Big number.
Mar-a-Lago itself is worth $1.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just take the Mar-a-Lago quote at face value. And we're talking about, let's put this in context for the press, by the way, that the context is Donald Trump routinely, and has been found liable for this, routinely inflates his assets when he needs to and deflates his assets when he needs to. And by the way, whenever he talks about deflating his assets publicly on Truth Central or whatever it's called, I want to, like, alert the IRS, because that's a gigantic red flag for tax evasion. But anyway,
right.
I digress. let's just say Mar-a-Lago is actually worth $1.5 billion. He could sell Mar-a-Lago, pay off his legal liability, or pay off this bond at the very least, for starters, and he would still have $1 billion left over, which he could then use for his campaign or whatever. Wouldn't have to beg his fanboys to give him any more money. He could just use that. He could just sell Mar-a-Lago and he'd be, you know, completely free of any of that. But of course, Mar-a-Lago isn't worth $1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. What did Judge Angoron put it at? What, $25 million at most?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's the extent of what that property is worth. He said he was worth $9 billion. He could pay off, you know, the New York State judgment, and he would still have $8.5 billion. I mean, that's a lot of money. I mean, I'm no math expert, but if you have $8.5 billion, you don't need to worry about money. But he, of course, doesn't have any of that. He's cash poor at the very least. You know, he famously, I mean, does a nine billionaire use scotch tape to tape his tie together? No, of course not. So he's not a wealthy man. And this is, and he's not a business genius. These are all myths that he has created for himself, that Mark Burnett at The Apprentice helped to create for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the sooner we can disabuse people of that nonsense, the better off, you know.
It's fictional Trump, and it's the same. It's the same Trump that Burnett invented. Really, I mean, it's the same Trump that you and I know. Noel Castler knows was peeing his fucking pants on The Apprentice and saying the N-word. But Mark Burnett was like, I'm going to make this sexy show that as a kid, I confess, I thought was super entertaining. I was like, oh my God, Mary Lou Henner, are you going to get fired this week? Because like, I need to know. And I'm like, Piers Morgan should win. And I drank that Kool-Aid because it was packaged in that way where it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is all like endorphins and dopamine. And I'm like, this is super fun. And that's the same Trump that we see today, obviously, without all of the editing. But with the same filter on the brain, right? So that like what you see is not what you see. They're seeing this like picture of vitality. Even Kara Swisher said he's like more vigorous than Biden. And it's like, oh, is this really what we're saying? But this is the mythology, right? But this mythology that he's this billionaire just like rolling around in dollars. And like, he's just, and that, but he also has this other problem where he keeps having to contradict himself because in that case, he's a billionaire, right? But in other cases, he's destitute and he's just a politician. Or when the stock market increases, he's not benefiting from that. In fact, that's just for rich people. He's just a politician, or that it's indicative of the fact that the markets seem to think he's going to win, which is also backwards. But like, there's all of this fictional Trump. And I just think it's so funny to me because we know now he can't afford that bond, but the cult is not going to see that. And Fox probably isn't even going to cover it. They're going to be like going along with the same bullshit lies that they've been going along with all this time because they believe what they want to believe, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he is a con man and an obvious con man.
Yeah.
It's important to use the word obvious because he is, it's abundantly clear that he's a con man. There's no mystery to that. There's no, well, maybe he is, maybe it, no. It's very obvious that he's a con man. And yet 74 million people in the last election just didn't care, or they didn't notice, or they don't realize that they're being suckered by an obvious con man. It's right there. It's right in front of you. Why don't you see it? That's the thing that drives me crazy.
He's already given them this magical edible gift of feeling legitimized in their bigotry and in their hate and in their sense of superiority. So once he gave them that, he's got them forever, right? Like, I think he could do shoot someone in the face and shoot someone on Fifth Avenue. I think he could do anything. You could tell them anything about him. You could have a video, I don't know, of him like fucking koalas. I don't know. Honest to God, I don't know that he could fuck a koala, but let's just say he could. And the koala was like talking and saying, please don't fuck me. I'm just a koala. And then they would be like, oh my God, he made fucking koalas great again. Like, he brought it back. I'm just saying, like, that's a ridiculous example, but it's not impossible or implausible because nothing is with Donald Trump. So koalas, just let us know that you're safe. But still, there is pretty much nothing he could do. I mean, he had our documents in his fucking bathroom. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. That's like greatness. And I do think we talked about this earlier, though. Like, I mean, I think we did. But now, no, maybe it was a different interview I had, but there.
I know exactly what you're doing, though, because that happens to me all the time.
Yeah, but the thing is, he doesn't want us, the American people, to see any more information about that case. The documents case in particular is the one where I'm like, he really doesn't want us to see this before the election because we're going to find out some shit. But he doesn't want us to find out or hear any of the truth, the facts that we don't already know, because they are going to be so damning that he's able to delay this stuff long enough, and he's got Cannon down there, frigging, you know, loyalist crazy person, that he needs this stuff as far away from the public eye as possible for as long as possible, because if he can get insulated in that White House again, it can all come out and they can't touch him.
And the other thing that I think we should bear in mind too, that while Merrick Garland took way too much time to launch the investigation and so forth, and we're all frustrated with that. Yeah. It's important to also remember that whether Donald Trump is fully held accountable for his crimes is ultimately going to come down to us.
Yes.
Whether those convictions could have happened today. He could have been sentenced yesterday. And for those sentences to stick, we would need to make sure he loses in November. Otherwise, he's going to pardon himself, et cetera. He's going to wiggle out of accountability. And, you know, people say, well, Fulton County, he can't pardon himself for that, or New York City with Alvin Bragg. Well, yeah, but with that, do you think he's going to leave the White House and report for jail? in Fulton County while he's president. No way.
Nope.
He will not. He will not accept any of those verdicts as president. He will do everything he can, use every presidential lever he can, and make up some new ones to get out of legal accountability. So this Donald Trump's accountability comes down to us. We decide whether Donald Trump goes to jail and whether that prison sentence sticks. So there you go.
I mean, that's the perfect place to end that portion of the conversation, because it was always meant to be about we the people, and it was always meant to be up to us. It should have probably been ended when Mitch McConnell had the chance, but it wasn't. And any one of those impeachments, actually. But we do have the power. So it is up to us, and we're the ones that have to finally hold him accountable for real. That is incredibly important to remember. Now, with that, we're going to segue to the totally random rapid fire question round. Are you ready, Bob Seska?
Oh, okay. Yes, please.
These are very serious questions, and I know I've kept you a long time, but I promise this is okay. Whose internet search history would you rather see, Josh Hawley or Katie Britt?
Oh, Josh Hawley. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And especially if you can see, because they have those incognito windows now in the browsers.
Oh.
If there's a way to see past that, that would be even more fun.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, because you can open up an incognito browser and it doesn't track your history.
I did not know that.
I need to search for anything,
but you don't go that far extreme the way Josh Hawley and his wife are. And we've seen them with a kiss without some crazy shit in the incognito browser. Oh, this is such an important question, and it really will change the world. Do you prefer the center or corner piece of a brownie?
Oh, the corner piece.
Really?
Easily. By the way, brownies are my favorite dessert. So it's a good question.
I had no idea.
But you got to go for the corner piece, because you not only get the softer texture of the inner brownie, but you get the harder, chunkier outer piece of the brownie in there too. And so that gives it some stability. It's almost like a piece of pizza where you get the crust, you got something to grab onto, and then the floppy rest of it. You know, you're like me and you just grab the brownie with your hand and just do it like that, and it's easier.
See, that's my theory on myself. You need something to grab onto to hold the floppy center. But I'm a centerpiece. The only problem with the centerpiece is you can't go first for the centerpiece, because you can't get into the centerpiece. You have to go to the corners. But I still like the better. But thank you for answering that question, because I think, again, it's going to go a long way towards achieving world peace and sustaining this democracy into.
That's right. And I've said it in context, too. And that's important.
You did. Thank God. Thank God. Because I wouldn't have known it was about the auto industry if you hadn't said that in context.
That's right.
That's important.
My brownie remarks entirely about the auto industry. Let's be clear about this. I love the corner piece because, you know, cars and Detroit.
Bloodbath.
Yeah.
Did you know that all of that birtherism was just about the auto industry? Because that was shocking to me. I was like,
right, God. You know, damn us. We're so, you know, my God.
We know what we are. We jump the gun and we just jump to conclusions.
That's right.
And
we're
so short-sighted.
Sensationalistic. We're hyperbolic partisans is what we are.
Really, really. Yeah. Socialist, libtard, all those things. Okay. So we got real quick to wrap up. You have not one, but two shows, Trek Politics and the Bob Seska Show. And you have a Patreon, right?
Trek Politics is kind of on hiatus. I was doing that with Mary Trump over the summer, and because of the strike, we stopped doing the show, and then she's been working on a book, so she's been busy, so we haven't gotten back into Trek Politics. But yeah, the Bob Seska Show, that's my 3 or 4 times a week podcast. I do 3 free shows and then a show for Patreon on Fridays with Kimberly, and bobseska.com, also bobseskashow.com. That's the more important website address, because that's for the aforementioned Patreon page.
Awesome. And I've been on your podcast twice now, and it has been an amazingly fun time both times.
You will absolutely be back, so expect an invitation very, very soon.
Thank you, because it's so fun for me. I'm like, I leave and I'm like this big goofy smile. I'm like, that was so fun. I want to inject that into my veins like it's hydrochloroquine. Oh yay. Yeah, I mean, that's so fun. And it was incredible to have you on mine finally. To meet,
such a blast, Joe.
Yeah. Well, with that, and I'm very grateful. I wish you could help me really fast, maybe, because I need a tagline to say goodbye to people. Because always, every week, I'm like, well, that does it for this episode of the Are You Effing Kidding Me podcast. And thanks to my guest, Bob Seska, which is not every week. And then I go, Bye. But I need something. Like, what do I say? Like, I don't know. Like, eat a carrot? I don't really know. Like, how do I, what's like, I need a tagline. Like, call your mom. I don't know. Like,
See, I'm the wrong person to ask because I just end my show like I end my interviews like I do like a phone conversation. Okay, we'll talk to you next time. Okay, bye. Bye.
Okay. Okay.
You,
all right.
You hang
well,
up first. You no, you hang up first.
I'm doing you hang up first.
There
okay.
you go. Bingo.
There it is.
See?
God, you just gave me my tagline. You're such a genius. I knew this was the right person to ask. I knew it. Okay. Well, that does it for this episode of the Are You Effing Kidding Me podcast. My thanks again to my guest, Bob Seska.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Are you
going
to say it?
Thank you. Wait, I just forgot it now. What was
you
it?
Hang up first.
Okay. Holy shit. Oh my God. My brain just short circuited. Okay. Okay. Well, that does it for this episode of the Been kidding me, podcast. Thank you to my guest, Bob Seska. Bob Seska, thank you so much. Okay, you hang up first.
No, you hang up first.
You hang up first.
No, you.
No, you.
Okay, you. I'll hang up first.
Are You Effing Kidding Me? Is a production of the Political Voices Network. Please visit us at politicalvoicesnetwork.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.